Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is supported by the team at NZ Audio Editors. For all your editing services, you can find us on the World Wide Web at www.nzaudioeditors.com.
Welcome to Rocking Midlife, the podcast show that is here to encourage you that your second chapter in life can rock. My name is Kat Coluccio, I'm your host, and in each episode I will be joined by some amazing people who have chosen to rock their midlife years and beyond. So if you're looking down the barrel of midlife and wondering if your best years are behind you, this podcast is just for you, so make sure that you subscribe. Want to continue the conversation? Join me in my free Facebook group, Rocking Midlife, or find me at katcoluccio.com, where I have some fabulous free giveaways to encourage you that it is never too late to have a new beginning in life. But for now, let's rock.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to season two of the Rocking Midlife podcast. I hope that you've had a wonderful holiday season. We took a few weeks off there with the interviews because it is summer here in New Zealand, so a lot of people are away enjoying the heat, and I'm actually not enjoying the heat right at this moment. Let's just say that hot flushes and summer weather aren't necessarily the best buddies. But I am excited because I have an incredible lady with me today. Debbie Montgomery Johnson is a lady who I've actually interviewed before a couple of years ago in the Rocking Midlife group. Incredible lady with incredible story, which we'll talk about in a minute. But first of all, welcome, Debbie. It's wonderful to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Going to be cool. So let me just read a really brief bit of Debbie's bio, and then we're just going to do our usual plunge on in and have a conversation. And it's going to be all around a topic that I know a lot of you are going to go, wow, this is scary. So Debbie is a speaker, a best-selling author, and an entrepreneur. She's a woman on a mission. In her book, The Woman Behind the Smile, she shares her personal experience with a love, online love, that turned into betrayal and financial disaster. And she removes the mask of shame and shows others how to do the same. So we're talking romance scams here, folks. Many of us have something we're hiding, something we're ashamed of, something that through no fault of our own or through our own making, something that we keep hidden and that in turn keeps us hidden from each other and from the world. So we're going to go straight into Debbie right now. Tell us a little bit of your story, Debbie.
Well, thanks for having me. And I love the name of your podcast because I'm right there. I'm a little bit older than you guys. We're right there in that midlife. And, Absolutely. You know, things happen and they don't happen the way you plan them. And So in my story, you know, Lou and I had been married 26 years and I was rocking along at 52 years old thinking, you know, we're halfway through and I've got this and this and this that we have planned every first of the year. You know, you set up goals and we had never had a boring year. Looking back at goals, but then planning forward, we had all these things that we wanted to do. And on April 8th, 2010, I got a phone call. I was at a meeting. I was working. I got a call from one of my oldest boys, left a message because I turned my phone off at the meeting. And when I took the message, my son said, "Mom, Dad just died."
Wow.
And so I listened to that. My husband was 55 and 56. And I listened to that again. And then I saw that I had 12 messages on my phone. And more than just my son, it was a hospital calling. It was my mom and dad were calling. And the crazy thing is Lou had left. He had a race car. He had left on a Wednesday night to take his car over to the west side of Florida to get it tuned up for a big race that weekend in Miami. And so I just kind of given him a hug, kicked him out the door and, you know, said, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep.
Well, that was a Wednesday night. Thursday morning at 10:30, I got this phone call and I'm sitting there going, what in the world just happened? And then life just went into animated suspension and I went on autopilot because he had died. He actually had had a massive heart attack and was sitting at the hotel that morning, looked at the man beside him, said, here are my keys. There's my truck over there. Go put my stuff in the car, call 911. I'm having a heart attack. And within a half an hour, he was dead.
Goodness so me. That's crazy.
He hadn't been sick, you know, and that's, so I got thrown in there to being a single mom of four. Now my youngest was 15. So my older three were gone.
Yeah.
I had to learn how to run his company. I didn't know how to run his company, but that paid the bills. My job was really just for insurance purposes.
Yeah.
And so there were so many things thrown at me at that point, and I could have just hid under a rock and said, just take me away.
Yeah.
But I went into fix it mode, which so many of us do. And I planned a funeral for 500 people. I brought all my kids back. And I think it's interesting. The one time I got mad that he had died was that the week he died was my daughter's 19th birthday.
Oh gosh.
And my second son is an army pilot, and he was getting his wings. He was getting his pilot wings actually before my oldest son, who's also a military pilot. And so we were supposed to go to his flight school graduation that week, and I couldn't go. And I was just like, why did you happen to die right now? Like he could have planned it. But it gets you thinking about those things that you are really important to you. And really I had to do what I had to do. And running the company was the first thing I had to do because I had to keep the roof over our head. And fortunately, I'd had some really good job opportunities when I was younger. I was a banker, a senior bank manager. I was a paralegal. I was an Air Force intelligence officer. I had some really good training.
Yeah.
And then the things Lou had told me about the company, here's for all of us that are entrepreneurs. One of his clients called one day and said, Lou, you know, what happens if you die? Who's running your company? And I was sitting right across from him. And he said, well, Deb will run the company. I'm thinking, you've never taught me. I said, you need to have some sort of continuity plan, something so that I know what to do. And after he died, we did not have a continuity plan. I had a 4-page little sheet basically that said, here are my main customers. This is a lab. We have a vitamin supplement company.
Right.
And so he gave me the basics.
Yeah.
But never told me passwords or anything like that. Would think of.
Yeah.
So there were days I'd be sitting here and I had his picture up and I'd be looking at it and crying or just getting upset at him saying, just give me a hint on what the password might be.
Yeah.
And fortunately, he was pretty predictable on some of them, but some of them not. And it was just like, ah. So 6 months into this, so in September, October, my girlfriends, who were my sweetheart friends, they're like, you got to get a life. Because honestly, I was working 20 hours a day.
Yeah, it would have all been survival, wouldn't it?
You go into survival mode, and I kept my own job. I was working at an elementary school as their financial planner at that point. So I was doing that. I would do that from 6:30 in the morning until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I would go swimming, and that was my only time of control for me.
Yeah.
I could cry in the pool and no one would know that I was crying. I could talk to Lou. I could get myself in good shape physically. It was mental release. Then I would come home. I'd be home by 2 or 3, and then I would work until midnight.
Wow.
And between midnight and 4 a.m., I was alone for the first time in 26 years for an extended period of time. Nothing changed in the bed. The pillows didn't move. And that's when I felt the grief and the loneliness. And alone was tough. It was really tough. And because when I was out during the day, you put on that smile and you know, you're the self-sufficient one that's always fine.
Yeah.
But at night when you're alone, it's just, that was the toughest time. And that's when I got mad at Lou for dying. And that was the time when I realized that 2 months before he died, here's another aha moment.
Yeah.
We'd had life insurance. We'd paid life insurance for 30 years. And Lou had just gone from one age group to the next. So the premium went from $100 a month to $500 a month. And he refused to pay it.
Oh, no.
Not going to do that. So in February, he canceled his life insurance, thinking, we got plenty of, you know, investments or something. And I'm going, I've got four kids, honey. What are we going to do? You'll be fine. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Now, I knew he wasn't going to live to 80 or 90, but I never, ever thought he was going to die at 55.
Yeah.
But at that point, I didn't want the contention of fighting with him about the premiums. So I just let it go.
Oh, my goodness.
And 2 months later, when he died, suddenly I had no life insurance. I had the company, but I had no life insurance.
Yeah.
And if I can tell anybody anything at that point, especially the guys and a lot of Lou's friends own their own companies, I'm like, you guys have got to learn from this.
Yeah.
I have a company that I can figure out how to run, but your wives would be with nothing. They might lose their home. They might, you know, be living with people. And that was a big aha moment for me. And as a single mom at that point, I went and I overinsured.
Yeah.
I got so much insurance on myself.
Yeah.
In the event something happened, and it wasn't the soundest, and I've changed that in the last 10 years. But that was my survival mode and method to protect the kids, was make sure that you do what he didn't do.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the what did I do?
Yeah, you're in this shocked state. You're trying to survive. You're trying to deal with your family and your kids, and I can imagine their grief as well as your grief. And so this obviously would have made you quite vulnerable as you're being worn down trying to do all this. So when did things start to happen with this scam?
Well, I didn't know the scam, obviously. I didn't even know there were scams. But my girlfriend said, because I wasn't a party person. I really didn't go out. We did a lot of family things together. So now I was not in any group. I wasn't part of the family group anymore. I didn't want to be part of the widows group, because I hated that. And all the widows, the widowers that I knew were all 85, 90 years old. And I was kind of their daughter's age. So I was out there by myself and working from home at that point.
Gosh.
And so my friends were like, try online dating. It's safe. It's safe. My mom had girlfriends in their 75, 80. They were meeting guys. I had a lot of friends that met their significant others online. And so I did my due diligence. I thought I went to faith-based sites thinking that they would be the safest.
Yeah.
And I kind of just looked around. I kind of called it stalking. You know, I wanted to see who was out there, because I was looking for guys between 55 and maybe 65. And, I was just mortified at what I saw.
Yeah.
The pictures that they showed up in there, I call it wife beater t-shirts. I don't know if you have those, but the t-shirts without the sleeves.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. Singlets. We call them wife beaters too. Singlets. Yeah.
Yeah. The wife beaters. And so they had those, they showed up in pictures with other women, and I'm thinking, what is it? And nobody could write. I think a fifth grader could write better than a lot of these men who said they were educated and had master's degrees and all that. And so I was really worried that this was not going to work, until I got a really nice message from a fella. He was a widower. He was from London. He was nice looking. He had a 10-year-old little boy, I think. And he was a contractor. He was an international businessman. And he wrote well. I'm thinking, wow, this is my kind of guy. And so I wrote back to him on the website, which is what they tell you to do. Keep within the website.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It started off a little slow, but because, you know, you're writing emails and they're going back and forth, and that takes some time, but it was probably a good way to start. And then a few weeks in, maybe not a few weeks, I've lost track, but Eric, his name is Dr. Eric Cole. And Eric, like I said, he was from London and was working as an international contractor out of Houston at the time. He said he was in Houston. And while he was in Houston, it was Thanksgiving. And I'm thinking, this is great. My mom and dad were over here. I was doing a Thanksgiving turkey and all day long. That was the one day Eric and I, we were instant messaging each other on Yahoo Chat. He moved me from the dating site onto Yahoo Chat, which I didn't know much about at the time. But for me, it was fun because I typed quickly and we were just having a blast. And so I told him all about Thanksgiving in America, and it was a fun day. Soon after that, he found out that he won this contract. He moved hardwood trees. I had investments in trees in Costa Rica, which he didn't know about. Wow. So I kind of thought I knew what he did.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going over to Malaysia. I have this job moving trees from Malaysia to India. It should be done by Christmas. I said, great. So He presumably went over there. We kept in touch. We were chatting every day. I did talk to him a couple of times, but he was in a part of the world I didn't know anything about. He was telling me that the internet service was poor. The telephone service was poor. It was the disconnect was not good. I mean, the connection was not good. And so I believe that. I had never been to Malaysia and, you know, Kuala Lumpur and all those places. And so I trusted what he was telling me was right. And so when he came on to Yahoo Chat, it could be in the middle of the night, I'd hear this little ding, ding, ding. And that's when the endorphins and all the fun would arrive. I'd jump out of bed and I would run to my computer and we would get online and we would just chat for hours. I didn't care what time it was. I'd go to work, you know, a few hours later and be exhausted all day long.
It's reminding me of that movie, You've Got Mail, remember, with Meg Ryan?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It was just like that. And it just got me so excited because, you know, he wrote really well. And so we went back and forth. I actually have 4,000 pages of journal.
Wow.
That I kept. And it's the one time in my life I was consistent. And I actually, it was an online journal and I copied and pasted every message I got from him, every note, every everything. Wow. And I thought I was going to have family history for my kids saying, this is how Eric and I met. Blah, blah, blah. Well, 4,000 pages of printed volumes and five journals. It's phenomenal. So he was great. And a friend told me later on that she said, Deb, of all the things that you had happen in your life, she goes, I felt like you, if you look at Swiss cheese, you know, the cheese that has holes,
the holes in it. Yeah.
Yeah. She said you had a hole in you, in your heart, in you that felt like it hadn't been listened to. Because my husband was 6'4", bold, brilliant, just bodacious, great guy. But I did feel small, you know, a lot of times, even though I was as well trained and educated. But there were times that I didn't like the contention and whatever he said, I was just going to go along with it. And I felt like he hadn't been listened to. And so for 2 years, Eric listened to everything I said and wrote back. And it just filled up that hole in me. So if I can be grateful for anything out of this, it's that I learned about myself and I filled up myself. And that was a healing power, you know? Mm. So Eric and I continued this 2-year relationship, never being together. But here's the thing there is it was safe for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for a physical relationship after 26 years, but I was ready for a pen pal, a companion, a friend, someone that I could talk to about the future.
Yeah. You got to give it to him for longevity in grooming you for so long, don't you? My goodness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I got to know his little boy, Kenny, and his sister, Mary, who was in London. Because with Eric traveling, Mary took care of Kenny. So there were some times that I had a Yahoo chat with Mary and Kenny, had a chat with his attorney, had a chat with him. And I'm like, wow, this is great. I started to get to know the whole family. Well,
wow.
2 years into it, he came in on one morning and asked me about forgiveness. Now, we'd had a lot of really spiritual discussions over the years. Mm. And so I put on my spiritual hat and I sat down for hours and was talking to him about forgiveness. And then we get disconnected, which was not unusual.
Yeah.
Came back on. He said, do you remember what we were talking about? Let's revisit. And I did. And then finally I said, Eric, did I do something wrong? I don't know why I would have thought I did something wrong, but it just came out of me. Did I do something wrong? Why are we talking about forgiveness? And that's when he said, Deb, I have something to tell you that's going to hurt you. And at that point, I'm like, well, you don't have to tell me.
Yeah.
I want to be hurt. He said, I have a confession to make. And at that point, I'd heard a confession once in my married life and I didn't like it. Mm. And at that point, I'm like, Eric, you don't have to tell me. He goes, I need to confess something and I need to know that you can forgive me.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And that's when he said, this has all been a scam. And you can imagine, I'm looking at dual screens of my handsome Brit and this, now he's writing to me telling me this had all been a scam. And I'm thinking, you're sick, something's wrong. Cause we'd had those things happen over the years.
Yeah.
He said, you're lying to me now. He goes, I'm not lying. And I said, you need to prove to me that you're not lying of all things. And he said, on Yahoo chat, there's a camera. I'm going to come on live and we're going to see each other. And at that point, I'm like, for crying out loud, for 2 years, I've been asking to go on Skype or do something.
Wow.
No FaceTime. So he walked me through the little camera, and I'm looking at the screenshots of my handsome Brit, and up pops this little camera. And now I'm looking at a dark haired, dark eyed, dark skinned young man with a big smile on his face. And I just died. Mm. I actually took a picture of him, and I did write my book, The Woman Behind the Smile. And in that book is the one picture I have of the real guy.
Wow.
And he was a young Nigerian fella named Joseph. And Joseph had this big smile on his face. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what have I done here?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, all of a sudden that was kind of like hitting a brick wall. And I'm like, how do I get out of this? How do I, you know, how? And then he gets on and says, well, can we keep this going? Mm. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
He says, is it because I'm young and black? I'm thinking, well, maybe, but no. I said, Eric, you stole, here's the aha moment.
Yeah.
You stole over $1 million from me.
Okay. So that's what you haven't told us yet. How did this all, wow.
Well, over those 2 years, you know, I owned a business. He owned a business. I understand sometimes that you don't get paid until a job is over. And so throughout that period of time, he was running into snags with customs, with tariffs, with you name it. He had had some issues, and the money wasn't going to come to him until the end.
Wow.
And I had no reason not to trust that was true.
So bit by bit, just.
Yeah. And at some point, someone's like, well, why didn't you just stop? If you think about it, you've given someone a lot of money. You trust them, their family.
Mm.
If you stop, you know you're not going to get it back.
Yeah.
If you keep going one more time, you have the hope that this will finally be over.
Yeah.
And then he'll get paid. He'll come home.
Yep.
And that's what was happening. Now,
so what did he say when you told him that, you know, he'd stolen from you? And yet here he is smiling, wanting to be friends.
He knew exactly how much it was. And he said, Deb, I can't get it all back to you, but someday I will. And I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
But I did want to know why he did it. And I wanted to know, you know, had he done it to other women? And he said that he had, not for as long as with me. And I'm like, well, why did you confess? There's the one thing that I always wanted to know. And I'm really grateful that he did. He said to me that he had started to develop feelings for me. And wow. I'm thinking, well, that might be true. That might be part of the scam also, but I have to believe that part of my kindness and goodness over those years rubbed off for at least for a minute.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was so grateful later on that he confessed and I saw him, because that gave me closure.
Yeah.
I had a face to the story. And that is most women and men that this happens to. And there are millions around the world.
They don't get that, do they?
They don't. And they can't put closure to it.
Yeah.
And if he had done that, it would have been worse than when Lou left and died.
Yeah.
Because now I had given away all my finances and my security and my heart. It ripped my heart out from underneath me.
Yeah.
In a way I'd never experienced that before.
So how did you deal with the shame and the embarrassment and all of that that goes with it? Because you ended up on national media talking about this. So you've gone from someone who was a victim to someone who has been open about this happening to you.
Right. My natural self wanted to hide.
Yeah.
My mom and dad came over right when it happened, because I got my parents involved. I'd asked them to help me at one point, and my dad gave me $100,000.
Wow.
Thinking we're going to pay him right back. Right. So when this happened, they were the first ones I called, and they came right over. That next day we went into the FBI with my 4,000 pages of journal and my meticulous financial records.
Wow. Yeah.
And the FBI said, Deb, we're really sorry. More men than women in Palm Beach County, Florida, get taken for over $1 million, but they'll never talk about it. And unless you can get him here to the United States, there's nothing we can do.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, I've watched TV. I know what the FBI can do. And if they can't.
Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? they're also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Can help me. Nobody can help me. And I just shut down. And yeah. I just put up that mask. And that's when I became the woman behind the smile.
Yeah.
I had to pretend to everybody that it just didn't work out. And he just, you know, we stopped dating.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. You're getting one of my roosters singing away here now.
Yeah, and I'm getting the sun coming in. I don't know what time it is over there. But
now, yeah, you're feeling it, hey?
Yeah, but it's okay. Be blessed for that. Because honestly, when Lou died, I was 52 and I zipped right through menopause and skipped all that hot flashes. But I don't want anybody's husband dying so they can go through menopause without hot flashes.
Yeah, yeah. So, just to clarify that point, yeah.
No, wow. I would have rather been hot. So it was, you know, it was incredible. And at that point, I just hid. I was so ashamed of what I'd done and so vulnerable. And I when the FBI said, Deb, you were victimized, you were manipulated, I'm thinking, I'm not a victim. I'm not going to carry that on me. And I honestly, a few months later, I started dating again. And I don't know how in the world I got the guts to do that, but I was not going to let that scammer get the best of me.
Yeah.
And I ended up meeting the gentleman that I'm actually married to. So
lovely. Yeah.
That's the hope of it. And I also knew at that point when the FBI said they couldn't help me, that any hope of getting the money back was gone.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, what the women that I work with today, they're angry because they want that money back. Well, just realize when you're giving money away to anybody, you're probably not going to get it back.
Yeah.
Even family, you know, and Eric, this is a thing. They groom you. And Eric groomed me for so long that he became part of my family.
Yeah.
And I would do anything for family. And I say that I would give almost anything for family.
Yeah.
But the online world, if anybody asks you for money, don't do it. That's the bottom line, because you will not get it back. And you know, I went to the banks afterwards, former banker here, and they're like, oops, sorry, you did it. Nothing we can do. Those accounts are closed and there's nothing we can do. The FBI, nothing they can do.
Yeah.
The only thing that I say is if you've been taken in any way, file a report, go to the police.
Yeah.
They're going to laugh at you. So don't go in there intending to get any money back or getting them to help you.
Yeah.
But you need to get a report. Here in the United States, if you have a police report, you can possibly get assistance for therapy, maybe rent assistance, some help.
Okay.
But you can't, they're not going to help you get the money back. And until we're working with law enforcement to try to educate them that if 50 years ago, somebody that had been beaten up by their spouse would walk into a police department, they'd say, honey, be nicer to your husband and go home.
Yeah.
Today you walk in and you have a black eye, they go and arrest him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like we are right now, this relationship and fraud in general. There's nothing that the law enforcement can do except write a report for you. And then you can use that going forward to get some sort of assistance.
Get some help.
If possible. That's what I wanted people to know. And that's what I sort of did, but I was out there by myself. You didn't hear about this.
Yeah.
From anybody else online. Victims do not come and talk about what happened.
Yeah.
And the men, especially because they're angry that they were taken, they're upset that they didn't help the person. And it turns out that most men that have been scammed, it's men pretending to be women scamming men. And so there's that whole, you know,
embarrassment and shame factor with all of that.
And shame. And they're businessmen and they don't want to, you know, look weak. So the victims typically are not going to speak up.
Yeah.
But
now we were talking, sorry, Debbie, we were talking earlier before we turned the mic on, and I should have learned by now, I should just press go from the word go, because you had the fabulous conversations beforehand. And I was telling Debbie how last week in the Rocking Midlife group, our Tuesday topic, that's when we have quite vulnerable conversations, was around women who have found themselves single at midlife. And then Debbie was starting to say that this age is actually one of the main ages, isn't it, one of the demographics where scammers are particularly targeting. So could you maybe explain a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. I think we're talking about the average age of a woman being a single again, either due to divorce or being widowed, is about 52 to 55.
Yeah.
And that was right the age I was at the time. And so when you're going on to, you know, trying to move on because you're young enough that you want to move on.
Yeah.
But old enough to be wise enough to know what's going on. If you go onto a website, a dating site, you want to make sure that you don't put down that you're a widow. You don't want to put down that you're divorced.
Yeah.
Now, presumably if you're on a dating site, you're single. So that shouldn't be an issue. You want to be really careful about what you say.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for new profiles. They're looking for widows. They're looking for divorcees. And that's their first haha. And when you get onto a website, they're going to go after you really fast.
Right. So I'm presuming because you've got those that they're suspecting that you might have some money behind you, like payouts or inheritance. So.
Yeah. So actually, it's maybe a blessing that I didn't have that life insurance. Maybe I would have lost more.
Wow.
But yeah, I've had friends that have lost their husbands and they were waiting for the insurance to come in.
Yeah.
And that's when they were really, you know, the hook, the scammers were coming out and I'm like, you guys be careful, be careful. And one girl, she was sending me pictures of the fella that she had gotten in, was starting to get involved with.
Mm.
And within a minute, I did a reverse search on Google and I found 12 profiles that this guy's picture was set up with. And I stopped her immediately.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I would say, if you're going into online dating again in your 50s, have a buddy. I always call it a dating buddy.
Yeah.
Have someone that is your wingman. objective, because as soon as you get someone that's treating you kindly, sweetly, you know, showing you some affection, your brain just gets hijacked. It's that amygdala hijack. And for me, it was the heart rules the head, and you're so you know, I hadn't dated since I was, I don't know, in my 20s.
Yeah.
When I got married at 25. And you go through those, I'm not enough, you know, thinking that you're 16 again and you're not pretty enough, smart enough, and all those things, which is absolutely rubbish.
Yeah.
Because we've had such good experiences and we're really fabulous women in our 50s that we have to fight ourselves in not being enough. And so when someone comes on and says, well, you're so pretty or you're so smart or all this, it's just like, whoa, bring it on. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so what are some of the danger signs? What are some of the danger signs that women should look for to know that they're actually the person they're talking to is not who they think?
Okay. First off, if it's Facebook or any of those dating sites, do a reverse search on the picture. Mm-hmm. Because most of the pictures are impersonation, they're identity fraud, and you've got to be careful. If they start to say that they have feelings for you rather quickly, and that happened to me, and I'm thinking, you don't really know me, but you're telling me that you love me now. Your brain gets hijacked on that too. But if you understand that if they're moving quickly, because they want to know if you're going to be in or out.
Yeah.
And that's usually a scammer. If they want to move you off the dating site, or not just dating sites, it's words with friends. I had a gal the other day from over in Far East. She'd been on a language training program, a fellow that was a businessman out of the UK. Careful, those guys in the UK.
Yeah.
he wanted to learn some Vietnamese because he was going to be doing some business in Vietnam. So it was a language training app.
Wow.
And she was taken for thousands and thousands of dollars because he became a friend. So just be careful. If they ask for money at all, done.
Yeah.
You know, my guy started off, he just wanted me to send a check to the dating site to get one of his friends in. Mm. It was like $40 or $50. It wasn't a lot, but that showed that I was willing to put a little bit of money out. So any money requests at all, nothing, you know, stop. Say it's on Facebook, or on Facebook particularly, look to see if you can see their friends lists. Mm. Here's some protection for you. Clamp down your privacy settings. Don't let anybody see your friends list.
Yeah.
And if you get friend requests and they have mutual friends, be really careful that you contact your mutual friends to see if they know these guys, because typically they're hijacking a friend. And I think you've seen it in your groups where they get a foot in the door.
Yeah.
And how trusting am I? If I see someone that's mutual friends with Kat, I think, oh, it's okay. I can be a friend with his. No, you know, we don't need 5,000 friends anymore.
Yeah.
We really don't. And they're going to be scammers.
It's interesting. Sorry, Debbie. I was just going to say on that point alone, I was saying to Debbie beforehand, ladies, because I am an administrator of a large group and I'm also in a number of other large groups, you would be shocked at the amount of people who are always trying to get into my group and who I have seen in these other groups. These are scammers, you know, pretending to be women And they're starting to get a little bit smarter. So you'll actually see they've got some photos on their profile. They'll usually grab some motivational things and try to talk the talk a little bit. But if you look, there'll be no friends, or the responses to their photos will be really, really odd. So you'll have a person looking like they're a middle-aged woman in their photos. But if you see the responses to their photo, it's like young street talk type responses. So you know immediately right. that, you know.
But so just women, be careful.
Yeah, got to look.
See when they started their page.
Yeah.
If you can see the first post,
yep.
you know, and then look to see if you can see their friends, because sometimes, or see who they're following.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're going to see a whole group of young men.
Yeah, that first post is a good one, particularly when they do try to get into your group when you're the administrator. It actually tells you they've been on Facebook since, you know, 2007, whatever. And I get them every second day, been on Facebook for 3 days, been on Facebook since, you know, beginning of January. And you know immediately, you don't even bother even looking at those profiles. It's just block, block, block. But they're constant. They're constant.
Absolutely. Because once we get one taken down, they put 10 up.
Yeah.
They changed the names. And here's one thing. I mean, I'm former military and my kids are active duty.
Yeah.
No military person is going to have a picture on Facebook if they're looking to date you. That doesn't
Or on
happen.
Instagram. Instagram is the other one where there's so many military colonels or surgeons in the military looking for love. Like, come on.
Or, yeah. then they need a plane ticket home.
Yeah.
Well, the military is going to get your boys home.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
They're not doctors at UNICEF. You know, yeah. engineers working in Syria. They're just not. They don't need your help.
Yeah.
And so those of us that are so willing to give, they're going to get you. You
yeah.
know, with time, there's a psychology of a scam. They're very well trained. They're trained in a university in Nigeria, in yeah. Ghana, in India. They're good. They're so far ahead of us. It's a multi-billion dollar economy.
Yeah. That's incredible, isn't
and
it?
So remember this, you know, if we're sending money, they're using it for Boko Haram, for trafficking, for all those things we would never, ever get involved in.
Yeah.
And yeah. so all I can say, you know, there's a place for online dating. I'm not against online dating. Just be careful.
Yeah.
Beware of what's out there and be aware. And yeah. I can just, you know, if you've been scammed or know of somebody, because here's the other thing, you're never going to tell anybody and you're going to push your friends away. So if you have a girlfriend that you knew was started to date and then she's not telling you what's going on, there's something going on.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to stop it midstream. You have to get them before they get into it, or you pick them up when they're broken.
Yeah. It's interesting. Really I've watched some of Dr. Phil's shows in the past where he's actually had people on with the whole family trying to convince them, and he's shown them the money they've lost and everything. And yet you're right. They still can't get their head around it and don't want to acknowledge. Well, so it is very difficult to do that.
I applaud Dr. Phil for trying to do that, but all yeah. that is doing is making victims' families feel good that they outed their mothers.
Yeah.
It really yeah. doesn't, you know, it's very difficult for the victim to recognize that, even if it's right in front of your face.
Yeah.
You know, at one point there will be, and that's, again, that's when, for me, having him confess yeah. and show me in person, that was
slap incredible.
In the face brick wall moment for me that,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, you know, what have I done? But most people won't get that.
Yeah.
And you know, the guys will disappear. If you start running out of money, they'll drop you like a hot potato.
Yeah.
Or this is the biggest thing they're doing now, is they're looking for the people that don't have the money or can't come up with it to be a money mule, to be a package mule.
Wow.
And that's the other side of the scam now, is that they're trying to, I know a woman this happened to, where she befriended somebody, she trusted him, and mm-hmm. he said, I need for you to accept some money. It's coming into your account. Please go out, withdraw it, and send it to me in Bitcoin. Send it to me in eBay cards or Amazon cards or something like that, any kind of debit card, credit card.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest thing. So now they're putting money into my bank account. I'm taking it out, sending it to them. The money is from somebody else's account. So now
yeah.
I'm helping them launder money.
Yeah.
You know, either I know it or I don't, but in any fact, ignorance is not, you know, a good reason to do it.
Yeah.
Now that mule's going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But the scammer has put an extra layer between him and the victims.
Incredible.
So, yeah, the government's going to come down on the money mules in a big way because they're usually here in America.
Yeah.
And they're not going to care if you didn't know. You know, this one particular woman I was working with, she got a benefits check from one of the state of Arizona. It was a check for some other woman, had the other woman's name on it. And I'm thinking, when you looked at your bank account, didn't that dawn on you? But my friend was from South America. She wasn't quite sure what was happening here.
Yeah.
And like, we went to the police at that point to kind of get a leg up saying, if you don't, they're going to come after you.
Gosh.
And they're not going to care that you didn't know that you trusted this person. Because now that other state wants the money back and she doesn't have it to give. So you put yourself in a double whammy, and then she was embarrassed to tell her son. And I'm like, you gotta talk. And here's the one thing that when this happens, people want to hide under that rock. They don't want anybody to know. You're never going to heal if you don't tell somebody.
Yeah.
And that's tell somebody that you trust. That's not going to do the victim blame because everybody gets taken by somebody in their lifetime.
Yep.
All of us. And this might be unusual, you know, romance scam, but the biggest scams going on right now, and like you and I talked, the COVID has not kept the scammers away from anybody. If anything, it's increased.
They're more active.
But business email compromise called BEC. Before COVID hit, this was the biggest money scam for international business people.
Wow.
Because the scammers would pretend to be the CEO of a company,
mm-hmm.
go to the CFO, go to accounts payable, and they would send an email on letterhead. I mean, it looked extraordinary.
Yeah.
Saying, wire so-and-so right now, this amount of money and hundreds of thousands of dollars were being taken out of business accounts.
Wow.
So we are all vulnerable, you know, and if you think that this isn't going to happen to you, bless your heart, because I hope it doesn't. It could happen to your mother. It could happen to your daughter, your best friend. Somebody out there that you know has either been scammed or is going to be scammed. And my message is be aware, spread the information, just educate. Because we don't want anybody, especially your group of women, you know, they're all our age. We're all the same age.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want anybody else taken advantage of. And honestly, I get emails all the time, doctors, lawyers, financial people, moms, you know, grandmas.
Yeah.
And it has no, there's no color, there's no race, there's no economic difference between any of us at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I am working with an organization in Nigeria. One of these gals, her mom was taken by a Nigerian young man and she lives in Nigeria.
Wow.
So they're working together because it is an international problem. New Zealand, Australia, it's a huge problem.
Well, what you said about the letterheads, that just reminded me, I've had to talk to my parents about this too. Every second day I'm getting some that look almost identical to PayPal or identical to our local banks here in New Zealand and Australia. So we'll get the ANZ and the BNZ and all those type of banks, and they look identical. So the hint for people who get those is, if you're not sure, number one, ring your bank. Number two, never click through their links, but check the email that it's been sent from, because that's normally your best telltale that it's not a bank exactly. document.
It might look really close.
Yeah.
You know, it might say CO instead of COM or, you know, there's a telltale. If you hover over the URL, you'll see where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And if you didn't initiate contact, forget it. I get emails with my company.
Yeah.
Saying, here's an invoice. I'm like, but you're not a client.
Yeah.
So get past the instant, you know, click. Just take a moment, think about it, look at it, revise, you know, review it.
Yep.
And then if you're still not ready, don't click on it. Go to the bank site, especially if they're saying, you know, you've got a problem with your bank.
Yeah. Contact the bank. Pick up the phone or go to their website. Yeah.
Right. Don't click.
Oh, wow. So much good information. I mean, we could go for hours here because I know you would have so many stories and case studies and things of people you've worked with. But what I really want to do is let everybody know that I'm going to be adding all of Debbie's contact places and websites and everything below in the show notes. But Debbie, if you can just tell us as well, where is the best place for people to go, A, to find you, and B, if they find themselves really worried or in a situation?
Okay, well, to find me, go to thewomanbehindthesmile.com. Mm-hmm. If anybody has been a victim or knows of one and they'd like to write to me, it's Debbie, D-E-B-B-Y, at thewomanbehindthesmile.com. If you know someone, again, that has been scammed and wants more information, go to SCARS, which is the Society of Citizens Against Relationship Scams. You can find it at romancescamsnow.com or againstscams.org. Report it to anyscam.com. We want you to report it to ic3.gov. It's on online, you know, crime. Again, not to get anybody to help you, but to add your information to your database and then report it. And I don't know how the police are over there, but we need to educate them and take somebody that you trust with you to report it, because I don't want you feeling terrible for reporting. Then you'll never get over it. But the last thing I want you to know is, if this has happened, give yourself time to forgive. Yeah. Forgive yourself. It happens to a lot of people, like millions around the world. Really good people. Don't beat yourself up. Don't be your worst critic. Understand that it happened. It's part of your past. It doesn't have to be your present, and it certainly doesn't have to be your future. And don't close off loving again.
Yeah.
If you say, I'm never going to get married, I'm never going to find love again, then you never will.
Yeah.
But if you just open your heart up, and we all know that falling in love is going to hurt sometimes. But if you don't allow your heart to open up, you'll never find it. And that's the greatest part of my story is I was able to find another gentleman who absolutely loves me and adores me and is right there behind me to encourage me to speak up.
Yeah.
And if you've been a victim, at some point you need to speak up. It's the only way that you're going to heal. And if you remember that by talking, you're going to save the girl that's sitting beside you thinking that she's going through this by herself.
Yeah.
And that's so true. Anything that happens to us is be there for somebody else, because you're not the only one going through this. Any problem in your life, there's always someone else that's going through the same thing.
Oh, fantastic. Look, great words of wisdom. I absolutely applaud you, Debbie. I mean, you've had two huge life crises there, losing your husband and then, you know, losing $1 million to this man and being lied to for 2 years and your whole identity that goes with it. Yet here you are, you know, helping others and speaking out and having found love again. And I'm so, so happy for you and so happy that women have someone they can look to and realize that you can actually go past these horrible things in your life and there is a future that you can still have. So really appreciate your time coming on to chat again. I think we'll be getting you back in season 3. We'll be doing the next round of this one. And yes, everybody, please make sure you check out the links below so you know where to find Debbie. So Debbie, again, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for getting the word out. I can't do it alone. And with you and the women around the world, we're going to stop this, or at least slow it down.
Absolutely. Thanks, so folks, please make sure you subscribe and share this episode. If ever there was an episode to really put out to your girlfriends, this is the one. We'll catch you all later on the next one. So thank you again, Rocking Midlife, the podcast.
Thanks for joining me on the Rocking Midlife podcast. If you've been inspired by today's episode, please make sure to share and leave a review on iTunes so that more people can be inspired to rock their midlife. Remember too, you can get my free giveaways or contact me at katcoluccio.com. I would love to hear from you.